considering Shamwell consistently speaking to the entire house or home family of Yisrael, and we have just considered the fact that Amar, which is the verb to promise, to declare, to speak, was modified by the call stem, which means that what follows should be interpreted literally rather than looking for some nuanced meaning, and that it was also shaded by the imperfect conjugation. Now, in Hebrew, verbs, and therefore the action associated with Yahweh's witness, are not stuck in time. Unlike English, there is no past, present, or future tense in Hebrew. Now, that realization alone should be startling and inspiring. Startling because since verbs do not have a past, present, or future tense, one cannot rationally say that God established testimony that was once valid but is no longer valid, was valid in the past, but is not valid in the present or future.
Yes.
Because Hebrew is true throughout time. Yes, throughout time. There's no limitations of time on anything that is conveyed in Hebrew. So if you're a Christian holding a New Testament, you're in a whole world of hurt. Now, the second thing that should be inspiring about this is that Yahweh equates himself to his Torah. That Yahweh and his testimony are one. If you have seen Yahweh's testimony, you've seen Yahweh. If you know Yahweh's testimony, you know Yahweh. That he is manifest in our world by his testimony. He is eternal. He is not stuck in time. He was, he is, and he will be simultaneously, as is the language he chose to reveal himself.
And that should be a hard concept for Christians to grab, because they talk about Yahweh, Yahusha as the Word.
Yes. Oh, but you think they're going to make
it? Yeah, understand.
Yeah,
I understand the other problems, but I mean, you know, here's a clue.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I feel like one of the biggest problems that they probably have, though, is that just the thought that you can have a relationship, that you don't have to be fearful, that you don't have to
bow down,
power, you don't have to constantly praise and worship and all this stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, think about it. One day out of the week, he says, "Set this aside for me. Let's get together. Let's you know, talk to me a little bit."
Yeah, it's like that Christian constantly repenting. You know, like Paul says, "Pray without ceasing." It's, you know, one and done. You know, your words should reflect, should be a response to Yahweh's words. So if you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, you only do it once. If you accept and act upon the invitations that Yahweh has laid out for us to become immortal, perfect, adopted, enriched, and empowered members of his family so that you can come, you can live with him, then you have done it. You don't constantly need to be repeating yourself.
Or begging for him to forgive you again.
Yeah, or begging for him to forgive you again, right?
Then see it.
Right. And so, with Hebrew's verbs existing throughout time, in Hebrew there are two conjugations that modify the duration of a statement's effect or of the act. One of them is the imperfect, the other is the perfect. Now, there are things which are a whole lot better conveyed in the imperfect, and there are things which are much better conveyed in the perfect. Let me give you an example. The seven instructions that Yahweh etched on the second of the two tablets in stone, where he says, for example, you should not kill. He actually writes that in the perfect, which means you should not make a habit of killing. Where he says you should not commit adultery, he actually writes that in the imperfect, which means you should not make a habit of committing adultery.
Otherwise.
Where he says you shouldn't bear false witness, he says just don't make it part of your ongoing behavior to consistently and continually bear false witness. And the beauty of that is that if you have violated any one of those seven instructions, including keeping the seventh day, as you mentioned, Scott, separate, special, the moment you begin to respect the seventh day and you keep it separate and special, then you're no longer in violation of the instruction. If you have borne false witness, which I did when I was a Christian, but you're no longer a Christian and no longer touting the lie of Christianity, then you're no longer in conflict with the instruction. So there's things that are a lot better for us written in the imperfect. And there are things like this, which Shamuel is doing. By writing it in the imperfect, what he is saying is that there is an unfolding, this is unfolding and habitual behavior, consistent and continual on behalf of Shamuel. This is what Shamuel did. Did it regularly, he did it consistently, he did it continually. He was always speaking on behalf of Yahweh to the entire house of Israel. That's what he did.
Now, to me, why that's so important is when we finally get to the thing where he says about government, which is even where we're leading, it means now, it means us, it means everybody.
Correct. It means them, it means us. And it means all the different governments between them and us. But also the imperfect says that everything that is being said under the influence of the imperfect has ongoing consequences.
Yes.
So what he's telling this audience has ongoing consequences to anyone who considers what follows, including us today. So that's the imperfect conjugation. So Shamuel literally and consistently spoke to the entire house of Israel. Now, house of Israel. Isn't that kind of an odd? It certainly wasn't one big home there.
No, but when you think in terms of Bereth Covenant,
family. Yeah, and wasn't Israel, wasn't that the name that Yahweh gave to Jacob?
Yep.
After Jacob fathered what became the 12 tribes that created the family of Israel?
Right. Includes all the goy that joined with them.
Right. So, house of Israel is family.
Mm-hmm.
It's Beth. Beth is means family. Means home and family. So this is, he was speaking to the house of Israel. Israel in and of itself is an interesting word. It is a compound of three Hebrew words. Ish, which means individuals. Sarah, which means to engage and endure. And El, with God. Now, it is interesting that the verb here is also a noun. Sarah. She was Ishak's mother, representing the birth of the covenant, and Abraham's wife, speaking of the family that became the covenant family.
That's a good thing to be called.
It's a good thing to be called. Now, there are times where Yahweh uses Israel to depict a nation that is estranged from him, such is the case here. And there are times when he uses Israel to speak of the chosen people. There's times that he uses Israel to speak of the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he uses it to speak of his children. Israel is is depictive of the descendants of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob that are naturally born into the family that engages and endures with God, as well as those of us who choose to engage and endure with God. And it is currently, as Israel, estranged from God. And we're told about the divorce in the book named Hosea, which you'll find is Hosea. And it uses Ephraim to speak of all of Israel, with the exception of, really, Yehudah. And then in Yirmiyah, Yahweh tells us that he's going to reaffirm his covenant and renew it with Yisrael and with Yehudah. Not only bringing Yisrael and Yehudah together to complete everything that Yisrael originally stood for, but also to reconcile his relationship, the relationship between Yisrael, Yehudah, and Yahweh. So when we speak of Yisrael, it's important to know who they are. You need to know who they are because you need to decide, do you want to be counted among them? Particularly in the ultimate reconciliation with Yahweh. Particularly since this is the basis of his covenant.
Well,
you know, that's really important because so many people have been conditioned into believing that anything that is said to Yisrael, which they transliterate Israel, is therefore to the Jews, and that's in their Old Testament, and it no longer applies. That's, I guess, that God could not be trusted, that God made a bad choice. And that God's testimony and promises cannot be relied upon. So we ought to instead believe the promises made by a man who admitted that he was demon-possessed, ruthless, and insane.
Perverted.
And a sexual pervert. Yes, he admitted to all of those things. Now, as for me, I'm not going to choose to believe the man who admitted that he was demon-possessed, vicious, perverted and insane.
And would lie on the top of the head.
Yeah. He writes, I cannot lie, he also writes that I will pretend to be what I'm not to gain an advantage over people.
So I guess that's not fault witness. under whose definition?
Under Satan's definition.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
So he spoke to the house of Yisrael, and you, as a listener, need to decide whether you or not you want to be a part of the family that engages and endures with God.
With God, yeah.
As for me, I count myself as Yisrael in the intended sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And in the reconciled state of the word.
Me too.
Now, you know, one of the things that's interesting, too, here, because God's not stuck in time, like his word. When God says that Yisrael is currently estranged from him, and then he says that Yisrael will be reaffirmed and reunited, reconciled with him, then Yisrael exists in both states.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are those of Yisrael who are currently estranged, and there are those with Yisrael who are united.
Indeed.
So be careful of rejecting this message because it's to the house of Yisrael, unless you don't want to be counted amongst those who engage and endure with God, in which case, why are you listening to this program anyway?
Yeah, why read his word?
Yeah, why consider
it? I carry it around with you.
Yeah. Now, it says, for the purpose of drawing near by saying. This is the preposition law followed by a mark. The preposition law is interesting, and we'll consider it more in depth in a moment, but it means to move towards, and amar here is again qualified, modified by the call stem, but this time by the infinitive construct. The infinitive construct is a declaration which should be the call infinitive, which should be interpreted literally, and which is true with regard to everyone, in every place and throughout time. The infinitive construct says that what is being conveyed pertains to everyone, every place, at all times. It liberates the statement from being constrained to a particular people in a particular place or in a particular time. So infinitive construct means this should be viewed as a valid statement, particularly in the call, as a valid statement for all people in all places for all time.
Theologians know that.
Well, they should. I don't know. what you have to be careful of here is that those who go to Bible college and who get degrees from seminary
have an a priori.
Well, they will take a little Hebrew on occasion, not all of them. They'll take some Hebrew.
Oh, really?
A very little bit of Hebrew. And most of the Hebrew they're going to study is modern Hebrew as it was both filtered by the Masoretes,
mm-hmm.
and then
refiltered.
Refiltered to become the language of the modern state of Israel. So by religion and politics, they I don't think there's any of them that go back to the roots, that do what you have done, which is to look at the letters that comprise the words, because the letters all paint pictures of what the words represent.
Well, you know, even the ones that do that, they still are stuck in the Christian frame. I mean, it's like everything I go to translate through all my different sources and things, which are growing, is you have to have a filter. I mean, they throw in the Christian stuff or the Jewish stuff, rabbinical Judaism. If you don't know, I have like 100 words that, okay, I know it, if it don't mean this or if they say it doesn't mean this, they're wrong. And then
right.
You go through and prove it. You know, but you really have to have a filter. You got to have a perspective, which is the best thing that happened to me in running across you, to be quite honest, is now I have a filter so I can read this stuff and not be... Oh, wait a minute. That says...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's just look at Israel, for example.
Yeah.
The first letter is the Y. It's the Yod. It was originally called a Yod. Yod, to this day, means hand in Hebrew. It was drawn to depict the upper arm reaching down, the forearm reaching out with an open hand.
Open hand, right.
Yeah, that's the Yod. And so it's the first letter of Yahweh's name. It's the first letter of Yisrael. So it's Yahweh's hand reaching down and out to us. The second letter of Yisrael is the Shin, which is depicted as teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the words that nourishing words would be the most complete definition of it.
Right.
So the hand and the word of Yahweh. Right? And then it's the Rosh here is the individual who is listening, seeing. So it's an individual.
It's the head, so I mean, so everything, your intellect, not your,
right.
Not your body, mm-hmm. where it's standing
right.
or anything, is just absolutely intense.
Right. So the hand of Yahweh reaching down and his nourishing words for the observant person.
Right.
And then the last two letters are El, which is the title that Yahweh applies to himself. The first letter is the Aleph, mm-hmm. which is the Ram.
Ram.
Ram is part of the flock, and yet he's the defender of the flock.
Right.
He protects the flock. The Ram leads the flock. And the next letter is the Lamed, which is the
directional
shepherd,
to
shepherd's
leading
staff.
Leading you on a path.
Leading you, right.
Right.
So this is Yahweh's hand and his words, leading and protecting those who are observant, those who listen and observe what he has to say.
And that what he asked you to do, observe the Torah?
So my point with me, most people who go to seminary, to Bible school, do not study Hebrew. And the Hebrew, they never look at the Hebrew of Revelation. And they spend a lot of time studying Greek, but God never spoke Greek.
Mm-hmm. It's a weak language for this.
Right, yeah. You know, the Christian Jesus, who's really Yosha, he wasn't Greek. He didn't speak Greek. And so there's no reason to learn Greek, but they spend an enormous amount of time in Greek because Greek is the language of their New Testament. Greek was the language that Paul wrote in. Greek was the language of paganism and Gnosticism.
Mm-hmm. All the
Right. So is it possible that the vast preponderance of those who have PhDs in religion who have been to seminary and to Bible school don't know the implications of the call stem, the imperfect conjugation, or the infinitive construct? Yeah, I think it's likely. I think it's likely.
It's a shame. What a fraud.
It's a shame. Yeah, you ought not be pretending to be speaking on behalf of God if you don't even know the language in which he spoke. And why do it half-heartedly? Why ignore all of these elements which help us better understand what is being conveyed?
And they all claim it.
Yeah, they all claim it's divinely inspired, and then they...
I want to know the truth. I want to share the truth. Gosh, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it is indeed. So, this is that he spoke to the house of Yisrael for the purpose of drawing near by saying, if, this is M. Now, M in Hebrew introduces a conditional clause. So, if, whenever, and behold, only if. And so what follows now is there are five conditions being laid out to receive the benefit. The benefit is to be rescued and delivered from human influences, particularly national and militaristic influences. So that's the benefit. And there's five conditions for receiving that benefit. Now, one of the things that I think is a shame of the Christian religion is that they want to jump right to the benefit, which is salvation, but they don't ever consider what you're being saved from, what you're being delivered from, or saved to. They never consider who God actually is and what he has offered. And they never consider what it is that God is saving us from, and in this case, it's human government, particularly militaristic government. Who's the mightiest military in the history of the world?
United States.
That would be true. Second only to the United States in ancient history would be Rome.
Rome. They were unbelievable.
So that's what he's saving us from. So there's no God bless America.
No.
Now, the other thing that Christians ought almost universally ignore is that most all of Yahweh's promises, and I'm saying most all just because I don't want to claim that it's all when there might be an exception, but every one of the important promises that Yahweh makes are contingent upon us doing something.
Mm-hmm. Walk away.
In this case, there are five contingencies. If you don't know these five contingencies, if you don't understand the five contingencies, if you don't accept the five contingencies, if you don't act upon the five contingencies, you will not receive the promise.
Benefit. Right.
Yeah, the benefit is wholly and completely predicated on you coming to know, understand, accept, and respond to the five conditions. One by itself isn't going to do it.
No.
You say, well, God knows what's in my heart. Doesn't care. He probably does, but no, actually he doesn't.
Well,
but if he did, it wouldn't matter.
No.
It didn't matter. Now, this is going to talk about heart twice.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to examine what it means by taking something to heart in this particular case.
Yeah, without,
and he says...
Yeah, nothing.
So, here's the first. If, with all your heart, Leb, your inner being, that which constitutes your most authentic nature and becomes the very fabric of your life, the place where that which is known, understood, and accepted serves to provide perspective, guiding your thoughts and conduct, becoming the source of your emotions and motivations, goals and ambitions, preferences and purpose, volition and judgment. If, with all your heart, you return to Yahweh, you change, turn around, go in the opposite direction and come back. This was the call participle active, a literal verbal adjective whereby the subject acts and the object participates. Ooh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you return to Yahweh. So that's the first condition. With all your heart, you return to Yahweh. With everything that constitutes your most authentic nature, you return to Yahweh. Now, what does that presuppose? If you're being required as a condition to return to Yahweh, where are you presently with regard to Yahweh?
You're in the wrong path.
That's right. If you're being told that you need to change,
mm-hmm.
doesn't that mean that everyone in this audience had the wrong attitude, the wrong approach?
Yeah, he's talking to him.
Yeah, and does sense the verb here also means to turn around, shub,
mm-hmm.
they're all going in the wrong direction.
That's right.
So in this audience, these people were estranged from God.
Yes.
They had to change, and they had to go in the opposite direction.
Yes. Depart, remove yourself from so things that any dictionary would tell you.
Would any part of that be untrue relative to socialist secular humanists?
But you still have to depart. You can depart from religion and still go down politics road, or you can.
Right.
Or
right.
If you just depart from everything, if you don't go to God, you're still down the wrong road.
But this only says one thing.
Yes.
You've got to change your heart. With all your heart, with all of your inner nation, you need to return to Yahweh. So this says that everyone who is listening to this message was headed away from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be true of socialist secular humanism today. It would be true of Christianity today. It would be true of Hinduism, Buddhism, mm-hmm. and Islam, as well as Rabbinic Judaism.
Correct.
That for any of those individuals to return to God, they need to change. They need to go in the opposite direction. Now, by the fact that this was written as they call participle active, it means, and this is pretty neat, that if we, with all of our heart, our inner nature, if we change and begin this process of returning to Yahweh, Yahweh will be influenced by that choice.
Yes.
And so we will get God to help us along that way, so long as we take the initiative in this regard.
Yeah, that's the Hiphol, right? Hiphol called.
Well, no, it's the advantage here of the participle, the active participle.
Okay.
Yes, the Hiphol would convey this the same concept.
Okay.
Now, it's two is from El in the direction of the Almighty, Yahweh. And Yahweh, Yod-Heh, Wah-Heh, a hand reaching down to us,
mm-hmm.
a person standing up next to a tent peg, which means to increase, to secure a home, and then another person standing up, reaching up to God. The two Heys mean pay attention.
Now, in light of what we've been learning with Roy, you know, it's also I've kind of changed my with the Wah. I've also included to increase us. You know,
yeah, so of course
power.
That's what it means.
I mean, just looking at it a little bit deeper than
yes,
that.
Yeah, it's exactly what it means. Yeah, the letter Wah in Hebrew, which is depicted by the tent peg, means to increase. That's the primary meaning. It means to add to. Means to add to and to increase. The two people standing on both sides of the wall are being increased. They're being added to. And they're also being brought together.
Right. So
they represent Abraham and Sarah as the covenant. They're being increased.
Yes.
They're being empowered. They're being enriched. They're growing in stature and capability while being protected and sheltered by Yahweh and his family. all because Yahweh has reached down and out to them with an open hand, and they have paid attention and reached up to God and taken a stand with Him.
Wow.
That's Yahweh's name.
Yeah.
Comprised of three letters, one of which is repeated. Those three letters represent three of the five vowels in the Hebrew language, among the 22 letters in the Hebrew language, all of which are easily pronounceable. So this will bring you not to Allah, not to Jesus, not to the Lord,
but to
Yahweh. And then we find the second statement, choosing to turn away from and removing accordingly. And we'll consider what in a moment.